specify, the information has to be harmful to national security or even classified. A victory for Lewis Scooter Libby as he prepares to defend himself against charges in the CIA leak case. The federal judge in Washington today ordered the CIA to turn over some highly classified intelligence briefings to Libby, who was Dick Cheney's chief of staff. Scooter Libby says he needed those briefings for his defense. The CIA had warned the nation's security would be threatened if the documents were disclosed to Libby's lawyers, but the judge said the CIA can delete highly classified information or provide what he called topic overviews of what was discussed. The charges against Libby, perjury, obstruction of justice, and lying to FBI agents, stem from an investigation into the leak of CIA agent Valerie Plame's identity. A U.S. Marine among five people killed by a truck bomb in Iraq today. The military says the blast ripped through a line of cars at a checkpoint in Fallujah. Officials say it also killed three members of an Iraqi family and an Iraqi soldier. Bombings and shootings across the country killed at least 20 people today. This was the first Friday Baghdad has not been under extended curfew or vehicle restrictions. The Iraqi president calling for the new parliament to hold its first meeting March 19th. A top official in the Kurdish region, meanwhile, says Iraq is in political crisis because of bickering over the new term for the Shiite prime minister. The country's president is saying he doesn't think Ibrahim al-Jafri should serve again as Iraqi prime minister. This is Air America Radio News. I'm Bill Crowley.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Happy Friday to you. Malloy here on Air America Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We have just a little taste, as Rush Limbaugh would say. Can I get a little taste of that? We have a little taste of some typical George W. Bush insanity from the day he was speaking to the National Newspapers Association. The hope is that not too many foreign leaders were listening to Chuckle Nuts as he went through his semi-coherent, apparently drunken ramblings. He's embarrassing enough as it is, but standing in front of newspaper editors, or the newspapers, National Newspaper Association, I don't know if that's the writers or the publishers. And coming up in a few minutes, we'll spend a couple of minutes speaking with Scott Holcomb. He's a candidate for Secretary of State here in Georgia. He's a veteran and proponent of voting machine reform. In fact, he calls it his Make Every Vote Count campaign. Yeah, we met Scott at a, wasn't that East Cobb County thingy, right?
I believe so. And if you live in Georgia or you know anything about the debacle of the last several elections in Georgia, you know how crucial it is that we make every vote count in this state.
Yeah, in every state, but here in Georgia, we lost a senator and a governor because of the treachery of this fraudulent voting that occurred here. And Diebold machines are in every single precinct here in Georgia, so it's got to stop. And also, this Monday coming, I'll be broadcasting from our Madison, Wisconsin affiliate, the Mic 92.1 in Madison, Wisconsin. It's Monday night. Tuesday, I'm going to join some of the folks from 92.1, Lee Rayburn, and I will be at Hawk's Bar and Grill at 425 State Street, and we'll be there from 11 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon. And part of that is a fundraiser for
Deb Mayer.
Yeah, Deb Mayer, the woman who dared talk to her students about.
Actually, she honked for peace and lost her school teaching job.
Yeah, and she talked to her students about peace, and a couple of parents complained to the school board, and it's awful. And then at 7 p.m. Tuesday, the 14th, at 7 p.m., the University of Wisconsin College Democrats have invited me to give a speech at the Whitewater campus. So come on by, especially if you're a right-winger. All right. Couple of quick items here. Gail Norton has resigned after 5 years as being Bush's Secretary of the Interior, the position she held specifically and deliberately to destroy the Interior and to open it up to the most rapacious mining and timber corporations this country has, kind of on a par with those that operate, the oligarchs that operate in Russia. What a rapacious thug Gail Norton has been. She said in her letter to Bush that her resignation would be effective the end of this month. Jesus, Gail, why don't you leave now? But it was so poetic. She said in her 2-page resignation letter, "Now I feel it is time for me to leave this mountain you gave me to climb, catch my breath, then set my sights on new goals to achieve in the private sector." Yeah, she's going to become a paid whore for various lobbyists. She was a whore for the lead industry before she took over as Secretary of the Interior to destroy the everything in the interior she'd get her hands on. Plus, her Department of Interior is absolutely riddled with corruption. She is closely connected to Jack Abramoff. Millions of dollars have changed hands, have probably gone into her private banking account somewhere in Italy or wherever the Bank of Commerce and the Corruption International now banks. Her former deputy, Stephen Griles, also had a close relationship with Abramoff. Who else? There's somebody else that she was that was involved with. Boom, 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 boom. Anyway, she was also the Bush crime family's biggest advocate for opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge on Alaska's North Slope to oil drilling. She was a protege of James Watt, the thug who ran that department during Reagan's first term in office. Reagan, or Watt, was forced to resign after characterizing a coal commission in terms that were viewed by some as a slur. It was worse than that. Watt was the one that said there's no reason to protect the environment because Jesus is coming back very soon, so go ahead and rape, pillage, and plunder while you can. He did. He said that. He said that. She also co-founded, Gail Norton did, the Council of Republicans for Environmental Advocacy. Sounds like something you just want to go join. Yeah, I'm in favor of environmental advocacy or whatever you just said there. Yeah. That was a group whose sole function was to rip off Native American tribal councils and further destroy the environment. It's a group that has become embroiled in the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal. As one of the architects of Bush's so-called energy policy, you know, the energy policy, you don't? Well, neither do I. She trashed the regulations that used to be in place to when someone applied for a drilling permit, you know, to drill for gas or oil. There were all sorts of environmental issues that had to be decided. Is it a floodplain? Is it a geologically safe area? You know, all that. Is it going to cause runoffs into streams and rivers that will pollute water supplies? Gail Norton's job was to destroy those regulations, and she did. That was her job. She. What else? What else did this thug woman do? The those drilling permit speeding the approval of those drilling permits were that was particularly done in New Mexico, Colorado, and Wyoming's Powder River Basin, right? Yeah. Another one of her associates, Italia Federici, helped Jack Abramoff gain access to Gail's former chief, Griles, the guy I just mentioned, Stephen Griles. And that was in exchange for contributions from Abramoff's Indian tribe clients. And that testimony is thanks to investigative, or hearings anyway, conducted by John McCain and Byron Dorgan. So Gail Norton is a typical Bush destroyer. She spent her 5 years, as most of Bush's cabinet appointees do, destroying, undermining, perverting the agency or the bureau that allegedly she is supposed to operate on behalf of the American people. But Gail Norton, being a paid whore, as she was, as all of the Bush crime family operatives are whores, whether they're men or women. I'm not using the term in a gender sense. These are all whores. Every single one of them are absolute prostitutes. So Gail did what she was paid to do. Destroy as much as she can where it concerns the regulatory power that took decades to put together to protect the environment against the rapists who in the timber and the mining and the oil and gas industries. They don't give a damn. They don't care. Just let me dig holes in it. Let me rip it up. Let me cut it down. Let me burn it. So now she'll go to work either for the lead industry or maybe the tobacco industry or maybe, I don't know what industry, grocery manufacturers, thug outfit, mafia organization. Oops, I'm sorry, that's a slur on the mafia. Terrible. But anyway, Gail Norton, she's out of there. Another Bush prostitute. Gail Norton resigned, saying she appreciates the mountain Bush gave her to climb. Or did she say the mountain Bush gave her to mine? Hard to tell.
Mine every mountain, hill, every stream, level every hillside, everything that's green.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
You're already doing what's hard for your health. You diet.
That's hard.
You do regular exercise.
That's harder.
You even get a colonoscopy.
The hardest.
If your doctor says you're at risk for a heart attack, he could tell you that adding Bayer low dose is a simple way to help prevent one out of three heart attacks.
Now that's simple.
Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer low dose. A little does a lot.
Thanks a lot for the ride home. Hey, no problem. Just because you're a sophomore doesn't mean I can't talk to you.
Thanks.
Hey, while you're here, want to take a hit of some weed? Some good stuff. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, The Anti-Drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
hear in your vision so we can more better do our job.
We want to more better do our job here on the program tonight, too. Coming up a little bit, I think we're going to wait till the next hour because this is, again, kind of out there. Are you all familiar with the so-called the aristocrats joke? Oh, you're familiar with it, Gabby? Okay, because we're going to do it tonight. Gabby, I see her shaking her head and rolling her eyes through the window.
That is a triple X-rated joke.
Well, this is a version that is not triple X-rated. Well, unless you count the violent images. But we're going to do it anyway. Like I said, we got to push the envelope a little bit here. Email from, I'll call her BW. Yeah?
You know, you never push the envelope. Every night I go home thinking, you know, Mike needs to be a little bit more edgy.
This is from BW. It's the Tom DeLay movie. Robert Greenwald, the guy who did the Walmart movie, is distributing a new film. This one is about Tom DeLay. The trailer is available at TomDeLayMovie.com. TomDeLayMovie.com. And our correspondent BW writes, Mike, I hate these people. I hate these people so much that I, a serious lifelong pacifist, am joining you in claiming who I get when the lights go out. I'm a psychotherapist, a facilitator of spiritual workshops, and they have managed to push my buttons to that point. Go figure. The cognitive dissonance of continuing to live in a country and participate in a system that is so corrupt and so antithetical to every value I have is just overwhelming. One of the things psychology teaches us is that when the assault on the psyche is big enough and powerful enough, most people go into denial and find ways to rationalize their complicity because they're overwhelmed and feel powerless. I think that's what this malignant bunch of terrorists figured out. Just make the big lie enough, the lawlessness outrageous enough, and they could get away with anything because no one would know how to confront such blatant evil. Unfortunately, for the most part, they were right. That's why you get national outrage at the Dubai ports deal, a pretty minor happening in the scope of things. And most people aren't really too upset about the fact that we're being spied on, lied to, and bankrupted. Back to the DeLay movie. I intend to order it and make sure it is seen by as many people as possible. Like Fahrenheit 9/11, it's probably nothing we don't already know, but getting all the material in one place and getting a sense of the underlying philosophy motivating these criminals seems important to me. Take care. Please keep raging. It does my congested soul good. Best regards, BW. Wow, man. A facilitator of spiritual workshops, and they pushed her buttons. Well, I understand. You know, I try to surround myself with the love of a 19-month-old child. And my wife and my grandchildren and my adult children, and the love there is just enormous. It's just like a tidal wave. And even with that sort of protective barrier, I feel like somebody is just digging their fingernails through my soul. Just ripping in there. It's an awful feeling. And I guess that's why whenever I deign to go visit some of these right-wing websites and read what the freepers are talking about or how they're phrasing their lust for idiocy, it's so scary to me because I feel like I'm reading the backs and forths between a bunch of Nazis. And I mean real Nazis in Germany in the 30s who are just waiting to break loose to kill the Jews or kill the socialists or kill the liberals or kill the Catholics or whoever it is that's going to die from these animals. It's scary. It's frightening. And then I think about this new life that I'm responsible for in turning out into this, you know, to a direct degree, my 19-month-old daughter, to a less degree, my 5 and 6 year old and 7 and 10 year old grandchildren. And it's just, it's pretty unnerving. It's pretty unnerving. I guess what keeps me going, in addition to the love that I feel from my family, is the hope. You know, we talked about this one on this program, just the fact that hope, hope springs eternal from the human spirit, and without that, you know, what do you got? What do you got? My hope right now is pretty much hope that the political system in this country will be rescued. I don't know how that's going to happen, but that's the hope. Because if the political system is rescued from the clutches of these killers, then I think the moral and ethical standards of this country will come up a bit too. But as far as these freepers are concerned, God, you guys are just a sorry mass of ugliness, aren't you?
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
I'm a woman. I like things like movies with dialogue and sweater sets. I like hot cocoa on a rainy day. I like the word cocoa. But most of all, I like my big fat hog. Which is why I have Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Geico covers most kinds of bikes and has money-saving discounts. Geico. That's nice.
For a free rate quote on motorcycle insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, 3 buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. 2 little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. Scott Holcomb is a Democrat running for Secretary of State here in Georgia, and his primary campaign message is to ensure that the votes of people who do cast a ballot in the state are counted. As Secretary of State, Scott is going to be in charge of just about every legal aspect of business in the state, professional licensing, investments in the state, and so on and so forth. The Secretary of State is a key position, probably the most important position after governor. And Scott is a former captain in the United States Army. He has served, I believe, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. Let's bring him in. Scott Holcomb, thanks for joining us. Where is Scott? Can we bring him up, please? There's Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, good evening, Mike. How are you?
Doing fine. Sorry for the delay there. I don't know if you heard that. Am I right in saying that Secretary of State is probably the second most important job after governor?
It's definitely an important job, no question about that. Florida in 2000 and Ohio in 2004 demonstrated to the country and also to the world just how important a job it is. It's critically important that we have a very fair person in that office. And for Democrats, I think it's one that we really want to keep in our column.
Scott, as you know, Georgia was the first state to have Diebold or Diebold voting machines, touchscreen voting machines in every precinct. And I think you are aware, as most of us are, that those machines can be and have been tampered with. In my opinion, the tampering with those machines, either through the pre-programming or subsequent to the voting, resulted in our former Democratic governor and senator being turned out of office. Do you have plans to make voting in this state verifiable with a paper trail or getting rid of these machines?
Absolutely. I'm totally in support of a paper trail. You mentioned, Mike, my service in the military, and in many ways that service had a major influence on me deciding to run for Secretary of State. And back in November of 2000, I was in Bosnia, and one of my responsibilities was to help oversee their third national election after that country was torn apart by civil war.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned by watching that election was that people only trust if the system is open, if it's transparent, mm-hmm. and if it's fair. And so our system of computers and no paper trails, no way to independently verify the votes is flawed. And even if, just hypothetically, the machines were perfect and that the votes were accurate, there is a major perception out there that they're not, to include yours. And that's a problem that we need to fix, is that every single voter, what I want to do is have every single voter, when they go into the polls and they cast a vote, leave with the confidence that their vote is going to be counted as cast. It's critically important to the success of our democracy.
Yeah, it's a bedrock principle, one person, one vote, and that vote has to be tallied as it was cast by the person doing the voting. Now, I don't want to get into the person you're up against in the primary, but I do understand that she is... I'm talking about the current Secretary of State, who was instrumental in putting these machines in place. How difficult is it going to be to make sure that this sense that voters have in this state that you're describing is effective? What do you think you're going to have to do?
Well, it's just like your message, is speak truth to power. Is I believe in the facts, and I believe in smart policy. That's why I'm a Democrat. And so if there are problems with those machines, we need to get them fixed. And Democrats are, we have a proud tradition of implementing common sense government and common sense solutions to problems. And I think that the voter verified paper trail totally fits that bill. I'm not a great computer guy, but I've had trouble with my computer where it's crashed and everything else, so it only makes sense to me that we would have some type of paper record to go and count the votes. And that's something that really resonates across the state, and it's something that we certainly need to do. And I will be a very strong, strong advocate for it, both through the campaign and then certainly after taking office.
I want to mention Scott's website. It's scottholcomb.com. His last name is spelled H-O-L-C-O-M-B. scottholcomb.com. You spent, over a decade in the military, did you not?
That's right. I served for 12 years, 6 years in the Air National Guard while putting myself through college and law school, and then 6 years on active duty from 1998 until 2004.
What is your feeling about U.S. involvement militarily that has come about since the Bush administration took over?
Where to begin, Mike? Where to begin? I remember when he came into office, I was in Bosnia, and Condi Rice had written an article in Foreign Affairs that said that the military should not be used as the world's police force, and we need to bring our forces home and not use them to go and solve every problem around the world. And then you see what's taken place since then is their whole record has been one of inconsistency in terms of policy, inconsistency with American values, and I certainly have a lot of problems with it. I, after 9/11, deployed in support of the war in Afghanistan, and then I deployed in support of the war in Iraq, and just a dramatic difference between the two operations, where one was widely accepted around the world, and I even had meals with French officers, and then for the Iraq Wars, it was a very different feeling going into it for soldiers and for everybody that participated in it. And I think it's unfortunate how it's turned out. The administration vastly underestimated what was going to take place, and the notion that we were going to be greeted as liberators and it was going to be easy. Few of us thought that that was going to be the case, and certainly history is going to say the same thing, is that it wasn't easy, and they should have known a lot better before sending troops into danger.
Now, you're not running for the House or the Senate on the federal level. You're seeking a political office here in the state of Georgia. So attitudes and opinions about some of the Bush foreign policy, I guess, except in a very indirect way, would not apply where it concerns how you'll run the Secretary of State's office. So accepting that as a given in your campaign, what do you think? And this applies to the people listening in the state of Georgia, and maybe as a model for other people running for Secretary of State in various states. What do you see as a Democrat model for the office that you're going to win in the state of Georgia? What is it that you feel you should do that's not being done in this state now?
I think there's a number of things that can be done better. The theme of my campaign is to make every vote count. So the first priority is to increase voter participation. We need to get more people involved in the political process, and I'm going to work very hard to make that happen. But coupled with that is what we talked about at the beginning of the program, which is the confidence of voters in the machines. Many people don't vote because they don't think there's any reason to vote, because they don't think that the votes are being counted. So we need to reform the system so that way our voters have the confidence that the votes actually matter. And so that's the first thing. That's the most important thing, is to make every vote count and to really improve it here in Georgia. And frankly, I believe in bold vision. And my bold vision for Georgia is for us to have the best election system in the country. The second area that I really want to work on is business. Every day in the paper, you read about more jobs being lost. Is we need to find a way to keep jobs here and bring jobs here. The number one export of the Bush administration has been jobs. Mm. That's not a recipe for success. And mm-hmm. part of that, I think, is tied in with their worldview. When you have members of our House of Representatives who not only don't have passports but are proud that they've never used them, what does that signal to other countries in terms of developing relationships for economic growth? It doesn't send a good signal of cooperation. So we need leaders that understand the changes in the global economy, and for Georgia, that understand that Athens, Georgia is competing against Athens, Greece. Mm-hmm. Rome, Georgia is competing against Rome, Italy. And any leaders that don't understand that are suffering from constipated thinking, and they're not going to best serve the citizens of this great state.
You know, a lot of people, Scott, in this political season, I happen to be one of them, feel that the political system is a train wreck right now, the Republicans have so perverted the system, both on a national level and in so many states, and I would include that that scenario here in Georgia, that it is so difficult to get people enthused about change. How are you going to overcome that in your campaign?
A lot of it's what I learned in the military, and I'm going to learn or use some of those lessons as a candidate and then as Secretary of State. And what I believe leadership consists of is, at its core, service, is we need to get back to leaders who actually care about service. There are all too many leaders in this country right now, many are Republicans, that are in it for themselves. They're not in it for the people, and it's quickly revealed what their true intentions are. Is we need to get people who are actually want to do things of service for other people. So that is part of who I am. I've always been involved in service, and I'll continue to be involved in service. But the second thing is to let our actions be consistent with our words. You hear all this talk, and Republicans are very, very crafty at coming up with snappy legislative titles and various labels. But what do they mean?
Right.
What do they mean? What is it actually doing? And so I want to push very hard for the Democratic Party's actions to be consistent with its statements. And if we do that, we're going to get back and take back that mantle of leadership.
You know, I find it, we're almost out of time, Scott. I find it interesting that you are yet another veteran who comes out of the service. And I realize you had a career other than service, but you come home and decide to run for political office, but you decide to run as a Democrat. That I find that interesting. Scott, thanks a lot for taking time to talk with us, okay?
My pleasure, Mike. It's been a great honor.
Best of luck. We'll talk again as your Election Day gets closer. All right?
Thank you very much.
All right, sir. Take care. His name is Scott Holcomb. His website is scottholcomb.com, H-O-L-C-O-M-B. Check it out. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America.
Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Rodan. Dr. Kathy Fields and I created Proactive Solution because acne is the number one problem we see in our practices. As dermatologists, we treat acne as a physical condition. But what really affected us was seeing the emotional toll acne takes. So maybe you're the one with the breakouts. You shy away from social situations. You avoid being photographed. Or you won't leave the house without makeup. So what's preventing you from trying Proactiv? My guess is that you're afraid. You're afraid that it just won't work. Afraid to get your hopes up, only to be disappointed. This time you don't have to worry. We are so confident that Proactiv will work for you that I'm offering you a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Solution.
Just call 1-800-426-0651 and you'll become a believer. Let Proactiv prove it. Call 1-800-426-0651 for your risk-free trial. Call 1-800-426-0651. Call now.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour. A couple more emails here, because I'm getting behind on these. And when you guys take the time to write, I like to try to, the ones that are sent on to me by my screening committee here. This is from Stacy. Hello, Mike and Kathy. My husband went to work last night and was fighting with a vile Bush supporter. I mean, this guy is bad. But he said Air America is a CIA-run operation. That Air America is working on getting its listeners into concentration camps. God. I just thought you would find this humorous. Yeah, I do, Stacy. I really do. And this is from Trenton, New Jersey, a couple of days ago. President George W. Bush is on trial in a New Jersey classroom. Students in an advanced placement politics and government class in the Parsippany Troy Hills School District are staging a mock war crimes trial, charging Bush with, quote, crimes against civilian populations, end quote, and, quote, inhumane treatment of prisoners, end quote. The exercise has received lots of criticism after being mentioned on the Drudge Report website and talk radio shows. The district's interim superintendent said the hearing will continue, but the plans to have a five-teacher panel render a verdict have been shelved. One of the student prosecutors told a newspaper that her classmates are conducting the project in a fair and balanced way. She said she doesn't agree with critics who say it's not right to debate the issue in class. The mock hearing began Monday and will wrap up next week. I guess that's this week, because this is about a week old. First Lady Laura Bush, actor Michael Douglas, and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice were were all three honored Wednesday in recognition of International Women's Day and the United Nations Children's Fund's 60th anniversary. UNICEF awarded Laura Bush its Humanitarian Award, Rice its Public Service Award, and Michael Douglas its Private Citizens Award for their efforts on behalf of improving the education of girls in Afghanistan. Yeah. Laura Bush said in her acceptance speech, I believe that women everywhere share the same dreams, to be educated, to live in peace, to enjoy good health, to be prosperous, and to be heard. And, of course, these dreams start with the education of girls. Didn't we have a tape or an audio disc of Laura addressing the Afghan women?
Yes, actually, we played that on the Randy Rhodes program last Friday.
That's right, we did, didn't we? This is from Robert in Portland, Oregon. Mike, people who believe in the biblical version of creation support incestuous relationships. If God created Adam and Eve, who did their children have sex with to begin the population of Earth? Answer, their mother, their father, their brothers and their sisters and their cousins. That's incest. Maybe this is why incest is so prevalent in our society, a prevalence that has so permeated our culture that it will make the current scandal in the Catholic Church seem insignificant in scope. This belief system supports just how stupid and hypocritical the American people are. Hasn't anybody ever thought of this? And these are the people who are telling other people they're immoral and sinful. Breeding with relatives is called incest because mental illness equal idiots. See the connection? What happened to critical thought? How can people who otherwise come off as rational and intelligent throw out all ability to reason when it comes to the myths, fables, and falsities of religion? It shows just how easily manipulated the human psyche is. It's really scary. Well, I guess, although, don't forget the book of Genesis now. When, after Cain slew Abel, it says in Genesis that he was banished. God sent him out of the garden, sent him to the land of Nod, which is east of Eden. And there, Cain met his wife. Now, it's in Genesis. And if the Bible is inerrant, as some of these people say, never mind, because that's where you're supposed to have faith, I guess. But there was Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. Cain murders Abel. He gets banished from the general area of the garden because Adam and Eve were thrown out because the talking snakes. Well, never mind. But anyway, so it says in the Bible that Cain left his parents and went to dwell in the land of Nod, which is east of Eden. And it was there. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio. This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
Lobbyist Jack Abramoff is planning to name names when his trial begins later this month. Duke Cunningham will soon serve 8 years in the slammer. A number of other lawmakers may await a similar fate. But things are eerily business as usual on Capitol Hill. Lobbying reform is temporarily dead, pushed off the Senate's calendar by the Dubai port scandal. That's probably a good thing, since none of the proposed reforms will make much of a difference. Two Senate committees passed incredibly watered-down legislation last week. Many lawmakers believe there simply is no congressional ethics problem. They call the public's perception of corruption on Capitol Hill a myth. One right-wing senator even mocked efforts for reform by offering a series of ridiculous amendments in jest. Increasingly, Congress resembles a therapy session for crooks in denial. For more, visit thenation.com. I'm Ari Berman for Air America Radio.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
What are you reading?
Soda Can.
Like it?
I've read it before.
Yeah, me too. I found it rather predictable. Carbonated water, aspartame.
I like the part about the phenylketonuric, though. It sounds so ominous.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What do you think the author meant by canned under the authority of?
Ooh, that part did seem to come out of nowhere.
That's what I thought.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, 3 buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. 2 little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
Radio News. I'm Bill Crowley. Some environmentalists will not miss outgoing Interior Secretary Gail Norton. A spokeswoman for the Sierra Club says that group would give her work, quote, zero or an F. She says Norton was a fan of such controversial measures as oil drilling in an Arctic refuge, but she says, quote, fortunately, some of her agenda was blocked by Congress. After getting a resignation letter today, George Bush said Norton was a strong advocate for the wise use and protection of our nation's natural resources. Norton is leaving as her agency is mired in a lobbying scandal over Indian gaming licenses. Top lawmakers say emails show close relations between Norton's former deputy and disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff. The Department of Homeland Security announcing more arrests and a year-long crackdown on gangs. About 375 new arrests made in 24 states in the District of Columbia. That brings to nearly 2,400 the number of gang members picked up through what they call Operation Community Shield. Republicans and Democrats have found something to agree on, that Iraq is probably headed into civil war. An AP Ipsos poll found an overwhelming majority of Americans, including 70% of Republicans, 90% of Democrats, saying it is likely that a civil war will break out in Iraq. Poll found almost 4 of every 5 Americans think it's likely Iraq's heading toward civil war. Violence there has escalated since the destruction of a 1,200-year-old shrine in Samarra back in late February. That terror attack sparked hundreds of killings in the following week, with deadly explosions, kidnappings, and executions. Iraqi leaders, meanwhile, still struggling to form a government. George Bush's job approval on Iraq has dipped back to 37%. The poll also found, by the way, Democrats an 11-point edge over Republicans when people are asked who they want to win control of Congress in November. A big airline terminal at New York's LaGuardia Airport opened again. The Delta terminal partly evacuated when a man left a checkpoint before security could finish testing his shoes. Former Atlanta Mayor Bill Campbell found not guilty of taking payoffs while guiding the city in the 1990s, but the jury convicted former Mayor Campbell of tax evasion. He could get up to 9 years in jail. Legal experts have said it's doubtful he'll get the maximum sentence. The federal jury took a day and a half to find Campbell not guilty of racketeering and bribery. This is Air America Radio News.
Welcome back. It's almost 7 past the hour. In a few moments, we're going to play three or four sound bites for you from today. Chucklenuts addressing the National Newspaper Association conference. And immediately subsequent to those sound bites, because the segue is perfect, we are going to share with you the aristocrats joke, which is not really a joke, but more like a monologue. It's not all that long, but it is very graphic, extremely. This carries an X rating, as Kathy said earlier, but not for sexual content. Well, there is one little bit, but it's for the graphicness of it. So stick around for that. Right now, let's do some phone calls. All right, you want to do that? Chuck is calling from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Chuck.
I have bad news.
Uh-oh, what?
I spoke with you in December about Tom Fox and the other three peace workers that had been taken captive in Iraq.
Oh, that's right. You're with the Quaker group in Fayetteville.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, there's a release tonight, confirmed by the State Department. They found Tom Fox's body in Baghdad.
You know, I saw that, Chuck, and I didn't make the connection. Jeez, I'm just sorry as I can be.
Yeah, well, I just thought since you hadn't mentioned it, I thought it was worth bringing to the attention of your listeners. I listen to you just about every night, and you help me keep going. We're different in one respect, in that I'm something of a Christian, and I know that you have a different outlook on that.
And I respect you, and I deeply respect your point of view.
Well, I respect yours. I don't begrudge you any of your militant anti-religionism. They mostly deserve it, but I just want to say that in Tom's
Tell us a little bit about Tom, his connection with your organization, and say your organization again.
Well, my organization is Quaker House in Fayetteville, North Carolina. We do military counseling with folks from the GI Network. Tom didn't have any direct connection with that except that we were both Quakers. My connection with Tom is more personal. We were part of the same Quaker meeting or congregation in Northern Virginia for many years in the 80s and 90s. He has two kids. I have four, but my younger two are the same age as his kids. They grew up together in this meeting and are still in contact, even though they're scattered across the continent. And I saw Tom last summer at our annual regional Quaker conference, and he was between his trips to Iraq, and, you know, we sat over a meal and talked about kids, and they're young adults now, and they, you know, raise our eyebrows the way kids do. And we also talked about his work in Iraq and the dangers there. He was very clear about the dangers and also very matter-of-fact about it. I hope and pray that his death was not one of these awful things we have seen and heard about. Because it came to that. But nonetheless, he's as much a soldier for peace, freedom for Iraqi people as anybody carrying a weapon, and more so than a lot of them. And he's an example of courage and sacrifice that could be held up alongside anybody else that I know, and for a cause that endures, even though he has fallen along the way.
Chuck, what was Tom working on? I believe you already told me this several months back, but refresh us.
Tom and team that he was part of, they were doing a number of things, as we understand it. They were, for one thing, investigating the allegations of torture and were among the very first to bring information and reports about Abu Ghraib to the attention of U.S. authorities and even to the press. They did not get much attention when they, you know, brought these charges forward. But they were right, of course, and it was later that their information was proven to be correct in spades. They were also active visiting Fallujah, trying to work with people after the terrible fighting and destruction there. They worked with families in Baghdad who had members that were kidnapped either by U.S. forces, you know, the
right.
U.S. forces have been snatching people off the streets, and they might as well call it kidnapping because it's
sure.
about what it is,
sure.
as well as people, families who had members kidnapped by insurgent groups.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to authorities and tried to help them identify people and plead for their release. They were repeatedly warned about how dangerous this was, but they just felt that their Christian witness was one which called mm-hmm. them to put themselves in that dangerous situation to try to live out their beliefs. And they were also 100% against the occupation to start with.
Right.
They were clear that this was a war based on lies, an occupation based on falsehoods, and there was no justice to it. And so that was all part of the whole ball of wax. And there are still some team members there
mm-hmm.
who are working. We hear about them from time to time. They're still living very dangerously, and I guess their movements are somewhat restricted now.
You know,
so
Chuck,
that's what Tom did.
Chuck, I swear when I hear of people who are dedicated to peace as Tom was, as you are, as people, especially in the Quaker community, are and are so willing to do exactly what you're describing here, who wind up kidnapped or killed, I have a hard time believing that the killing was not somehow, or the kidnapping was not somehow, there wasn't some involvement by the occupation forces that are in that country. I don't have a problem believing that the Iraqis can make a distinction between those who are there to one way or another destroy their country and those who are there one way or another to try to heal their country. And if you find that thought on my part offensive, I apologize. But it's almost impossible for me to believe otherwise, that just pure insurgent forces kidnapped him or some of the other people who have been working for peace and murdered them. I just can't do it.
Well, I'm not going to say it is offensive. Anything is possible over there.
Yeah.
And, of course, we've been running a website, FreeTheCaptivesNow.org, another friend of Tom's and I, ever since early December, and we've already got an update up for tonight, the one that we never wanted to put up.
What's the site, Chuck?
FreeTheCaptivesNow.org.
Okay.
There's still three of them that we haven't heard about, so mm-hmm. there's still hope that they might be released safely. And in the course of doing that, updating it night after night, I've had to read about, well, there's hundreds of folks from lots of different countries that have been kidnapped over there by various groups for various agendas, and some of them have been killed, some of them have been released, some of them we still don't know about. And it seems like there is a variety of motives. Some are these religious fanatics, some of them are political maneuvering, some of them appear to be simply doing it for money, ransom, and some could very well be doing it in cahoots with forces that are associated with the occupation and
mm-hmm.
you know, various secret schemes and maneuvers and stuff. There have been enough journalists killed.
That's right.
That really anything is possible. So while I can't say that I've come to that same conclusion, I can't say that I have ruled it out either.
Yeah, I think it's more of a gut feeling on my part. I have no evidence or proof. Like you, I have tried to stay abreast of the ebb and flow of the violence in that country, and who is the target today? Who is the target tomorrow? How is the violence being carried out? And it's based on that that I have to conclude that there is stuff going on that like torture in Cuba and other places where the Bush administration apparently has set up this entire gulag that is so antithetical to what I was taught this country was all about, that step from torture and the murder of at least 80, according to Human Rights Watch, at least 80 or detainees in U.S. custody, the actual murder of those people, then it is not difficult for me to make the next move. It's a very small step from that to believing that some of the people being kidnapped are being kidnapped and murdered, not necessarily by insurgents. This is a terrible night, Chuck. I thank you for calling in. I wish we had a happier thing to talk about.
Thanks for listening, Mike. And remember Tom Fox, he died for peace. He's an American we can be proud of in this very difficult and hard to be proud of time.
I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. So the website again?
FreeTheCaptivesNow.org.
Free the captives, plural?
CaptivesNow. That's right. .org.
.org. All right. Yeah. Chuck, stay in touch.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. Right. That's all right. Thanks. I appreciate it. Take care.
Peace train sounding loud. Glide on the peace train.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
If you're not outraged, then you're just not paying attention. It's Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
22 past the hour. Let me just share this with you because Chuck took the time to call in here. Associated Press now is reporting this as of about 45 minutes ago. An American who is among four Christian activists kidnapped last year in Iraq has been killed. The State Department spokesman said Friday the FBI verified that a body found in Iraq Friday morning was that of Tom Fox, 54, of Clearbrook, Virginia. The spokesman said he had no information on the other three hostages. Clay said Noel Clay is the spokesman for the State Department. Clay said he did not know how Fox was killed, but said additional forensics will be done in the United States. Fox's family has been notified. Clay said, and quote, our heartfelt condolences go out to them, end quote. The spokesman added, the State Department continues to call for the unconditional release of all other hostages in Iraq. Yeah. Tom Fox's organization, Christian Peacemaker Teams, said tonight, quote, we mourn the loss of Tom Fox, who combined a lightness of spirit, a firm opposition to all oppression, and the recognition of God in everyone, end quote. Christian Peacemaker co-directors Doug Pritchard and Carol Rose said in a statement, quote, in response to Tom's passing, we ask that everyone set aside inclinations to vilify or demonize others, no matter what they have done, end quote. Paul Slattery of McLean, Virginia, who was a member of Fox's U.S.-based support team, said, quote, this guy was not after martyrdom by any means. He actually believed in his heart that he would better them by his conviction and his belief and his skills, and I think he largely succeeded. What he leaves behind is a tremendous challenge for the rest of us and a guiding force, end quote. Fox is one, was the one American among the four Christian peacemaker activists kidnapped last year in Iraq. On Tuesday, Al Jazeera aired footage of the three other activists purportedly appealing to their government to secure the release. The hostages seen in the brief video were Canadians James Loney and Harmeet Singh Sudan, and Briton Norman Kember. Alan Slater, a Canadian member of Christian Peacemaker Teams, said at the time that he was disturbed not to see Fox. And it goes on a bit more. Yeah, check out the website that that Chuck talked about, and take a look at the folks who are still being held captive. I don't know how one responds to that. In contravention of what I just read to you, that the request is being made by people on these peace teams not to place blame, I will place blame. I place the blame on the Bush administration. I place the entire blame for every death that occurs in that country, no matter the nationality of the person killed, directly, irrevocably, on the policies, and therefore the people behind those policies of this Bush crime family, whether it is those who lied us into the war or the military commanders who continue to lie to keep us there, or the politicians who treat this like some kind of an adventure that has some sort of a reward, as if it were character building or necessary to peace or stability. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't have the presence or the soul or the balance to accept this sort of stuff. I hate these bastards. I hate them. I hate them with a passion I didn't know still existed in me. These people who set policy in this country and in the UK, who send people over to kill and blow things up and then leave it to the peacemakers to try to clean up the mess. I hate them. I'm sorry. I wish I could be more like the people Jesus talked about on the Sermon on the Mount, but I know my limitations, and I can't.
So I just see fairly well. And it ain't no use in turning on your light, baby. I'm on the dark side of the road. But I wish there was something you would do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. But we never did too much talking anyway. But don't think twice, it's all right.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
You're already doing what's hard for your health. You diet.
That's hard.
You do regular exercise.
That's harder.
You even get a colonoscopy.
The hardest.
If your doctor says you're at risk for a heart attack, he could tell you that adding Bayer low dose is a simple way to help prevent one out of three heart attacks.
Now that's simple.
Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer low dose. A little does a lot.
Jen, what's up?
Hey, how'd you know I was having a party?
Everyone knows you're having a party.
Yeah, pretty crazy, isn't it?
Totally.
Hey, I'm gonna smoke up. Wanna get high? Here, you'll like this.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, the anti-drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Clarence Young, a scientist at GlaxoSmithKline, on how far he's willing to go.
Finding a new antibiotic is about as easy as catching one particular snowflake. It takes about 15 years to find one that works. Then, as soon as the bacteria develop resistance, we're right back where we started. But everyone benefits from antibiotics, so the war never stops. At GSK, quitting's just not an option.
GlaxoSmithKline. Today's medicines, tomorrow's miracles.
Know the greatest phrase ever invented in shopping? No, it's not, I'll just wait in the car. The greatest phrase is, no thanks, I'm just looking. I mean, what freedom, what liberation. What a great way to buy car insurance. In fact, why not do some looking right now? Go to GEICO.com. It's quick, it's easy, and you could save hundreds. You know, saving money looks good on you. GEICO.com. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
that we don't take we take lives when we have to protect the people. That's how I look at it.
That's how I look at it. 26 before the hour. All right. President Chucklenuts, that was him, was addressing the National Newspaper Association conference today. So let's have just a couple of snippets here. Before Bunny Pants took questions, he rambled incoherently again for about 15 minutes, mostly about the dirty jihadists who are threatening the security of his nice new oil fields in Iraq.
We're at war. I wish I could report to you we weren't at war. We are. There's an enemy that still lurks that would like to do serious harm to the United States. Much of my thinking, the decisions I have made, all revolve around that fateful moment when we got attacked.
By Iraq?
I vowed after September the 11th and after, I would use all assets at our disposal to protect you. That is by far the most important job of the president, is to secure this homeland.
No, it isn't.
There are lessons to have been learned after September the 11th. One of them is that we cannot take our security for granted.
Oh, Jesus, I get so sick of this. So, okay, so when are you going to start protecting us, Chucklenuts? All I see is countless dead in your pointless oil war. The most important job of the president, Chucklenuts, is to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, something that you're using for bathroom tissue. Anyway, Weak and Stupid then opens it up for questions. First newspaper writer asked about the civil war in Iraq. The question was, Mr. President, what are our plans if civil war breaks out in Iraq? Now, you know he sucks at reading and books and stuff, but apparently his basic math isn't too good either. The question, Mr. President, what are our plans if civil war breaks out in Iraq?
Step one is to make sure, do everything we can that there not be one.
Too late.
Secondly, I believe the Iraqi people have made a choice. You know, it wasn't all that long ago that 11 million people went to the polls. It may seem like an eternity, but that was last December, that people defied assassins, car bombers, threats, and said, we want democracy.
But we got in the way.
Secondly, the first real test for an interim government occurred when the Shia shrine was blown up, the holy site. And while as I said earlier, there was no question there was violence and killing, the society took a step back from the abyss. And people took a sober reflection about what a civil war would mean.
What the hell is he talking about? What is he talking about? Doesn't matter. Still struggling with the question of civil war in Iraq, Raisin Brain rambles on with some confusing and rather hostile language about Muslims. You know, wasn't he just out there talking about his United Arab Emirates port deal, how we got to make friendly with Arab nations? I don't think this is going to help, you know, Chucklenuts, to keep slamming radical totalitarian jihadist Islamists in the Muslim world.
It's you know, it's very important for the people in the Muslim world to understand that we understand there's a we're dealing with a we want them to have a democracy that reflects their histories and their traditions. A democracy in Iraq is important
to your oil interests.
It's important to deny safe haven to Al-Qaeda,
who were never there.
Zawahiri made it clear, he's the number two man in Al-Qaeda, that it's just a matter of time for America leaving.
What?
That's what he said.
But we've killed him six times.
And the reason why that was important for him to say, because they wanted to use Iraq as a place to plot, plan, as well as to spread their jihadist, their Islamist, and radical Islamic view. They're totalitarians. That's what they are.
As a place to plot, plan? Are you reading, you ignorant fool? Or is someone whispering into your earpiece again? Plot, plan. Oh, okay. Finally tonight, Chucklenuts talks about his recent visit to the Gulf region and efforts to clean up the remaining Hurricane Katrina disaster. What he says here has to be one of the most callous things I've heard him say yet about Katrina victims. This beats to hell his comments about looking in their bloodshot eyes, or how they need free houses with mortgages, or his evil mother saying they were better off dead or in shelters than living as poor black folk in the Ninth Ward, or his Stepford wife not even knowing the name of the hurricane, or his constant referrals to that part of the world. This one takes the cake. Listen up.
A lot of Mississippi's been cleaned up because a lot of the local folks decided to take that tact. Now, the problem in Louisiana, as far as debris cleanup, is that, like in the lower ninth, a lot of people haven't come back to their homes yet to see the devastation. They've been displaced around the country. And until people are able to come home, and until people are clear about what the rules will be and the funding mechanism will be, you know, it's going to be, the debris removal will be slow. When we first got down there, the government will remove debris off public property. But not private. We'll pay to remove debris off public property, but not private property. Simplest way to explain why not is you start moving debris off private property, and the guy shows up and says, "Where's my $1 million necklace?"
You cold-hearted son of a bitch, you. Where's my $1 million necklace? Oh, you mean some Negro is going to pop up and say, "Yo, bro, where my $1 million necklace?" Is that what you're saying? You racist thug. Jesus, you talk about an out-of-touch, elitist bastard. I just... Oh, man. What's an aristocrat? The aristocrats is a joke that's been with comics since vaudeville. It's a joke that's never told in public. It's a private joke for comedians, so you've never heard it before. It's a secret handshake among comics. It's also the dirtiest joke you'll ever hear. Now, the aristocrats is filthy, vile, disgusting. The aristocrats captures over 100 of the world's funniest, most gifted comics, giving the joke their own interpretation. And even in comedy, it's the singer, not the song. If you haven't seen the aristocrats, the video, you need to see it. But I found this on Buzzflash. The writer says, with all the stuff in mind about, you know, all the baggage that comes with the aristocrats, I humbly offer my take on this timeless joke. A guy walks into a talent agent's office and says, "Have I got an act for you?" The agent says, "Yeah, what sort of act?" And the guy says, "It's a political act. There's me, my running mate, our aides and media chums and their aides, and plus a few non-union extras who work for less than minimum wage. First, I walk out on stage with a baby seal. I start feeding the baby seal endangered fish that I pull from a 55-gallon drum labeled clean water. The fish had been soaked in mercury, polychlorinated biphenyls, and crude oil. While the baby seal oinks and pukes and turns green, my running mate starts clubbing it with a 6-foot crucifix. Our media chums narrate this whole thing, explaining how we're making the environment safer for fish and baby seals. Then my running mate starts stuffing illegal campaign contributions into the seal body's cavity while slicing off layers of fat and passing the fat to the audience. While our aides pass out press releases explaining that the baby seal fat is actually safer than it was before I fed it mercury and polychlorinated biphenyls. Next, one of the non-union extras drives a huge Humvee onto the stage. We've modified it so it gets 0.5 mile per gallon. It's belching out carbon monoxide and hydrocarbons like crazy. We've sealed all the ventilation ducts so the audience gets the full dose. This makes them lightheaded and more likely to find this entertaining. The Humvee has a banner on the side that says, "Blue skies." We start singing Louis Armstrong's "What a Wonderful World" in blackface and picking any voices. Al Jolson would have been proud of this part. And then we truck in a bunch of crippled kids and tell them how compassionate we are, but then we rip up their Medicare checks, dump them out of their wheelchairs, and order them off stage. They drag their disfigured bodies from the stage while we call them a drain on society, and we sell their wheelchairs to GM for scrap metal. Now, while this is going on, one of our media chums is having phone sex with his aide, describing unspeakable acts involving a falafel and a loofah, and he's masturbating the whole time. We patch into the call using an illegal wiretap and broadcast it over the PA system in the theater and blame the mainstream liberal press for the repulsive content. And then a guy dressed as Jesus walks on stage and kicks a guy dressed as Muhammad in the crotch. Jesus tells the audience that they need to give all their money to him or go to hell. Then Jesus picks up the crucifix we used to club the baby seal and attaches strings to it. The strings are connected to the hands and feet of a woman in a persistent vegetative state. Jesus makes her dance around the stage like a marionette and preaches about the kingdom of heaven. And after that, Rush Limbaugh comes on stage and bloviates about the sanctity of marriage, the importance of personal responsibility, and how drug users should be locked up in prison. As he's delivering this monologue, we trot out an underage girl my running mate has knocked up the day before. We dangle a morning after pill just out of her reach and lecture her on sexual abstinence. All her jumping up and down causes her to spontaneously abort her one-day-old embryo. And then we carve Ronald Reagan's face onto a life-size mock-up of the Statue of Liberty. Meanwhile, one of my aides is cleaning an assault rifle, which accidentally goes off and blows the head off of the lady in the front row. He then gives a long-winded lecture on the Second Amendment and, again, personal responsibility. On a giant screen at the back of the stage, we play an endless loop of news coverage of a privileged white girl who went missing in Aruba. And while this is going on, I start firing missiles at the studio next door, saying that the act over there is against family values and God, and they have weapons of mass destruction aimed at our studio. And then I do a pantomime of looking for the weapons under sofas and behind the curtains, laughing my ass off. I never find the weapons, but I keep insisting that the other studio was a dire threat to our studio. And I explain how morally superior we are and how we're the only ones who really understand personal responsibility and Christian values and abstinence and the sanctity of marriage and the evils of drug abuse. Then we all dance and slide around in the baby seal blood and fat and the dead lady's blood and the PCBs and oil and the tears from the underage pregnant girl. Did I mention she's homeless? She's homeless. We're rubbing the blood and oil all over each other, slapping each other in the backs, congratulating ourselves on a job well done, and laughing at the homeless pregnant girl and waterboarding this guy dressed as Muhammad as he issues a fatwa against us in the entire audience. And then for the finale, we all join in a rousing chorus of Near My God to Thee. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking the audience will walk out in droves and demand refunds. But that's the beauty. My running mate and I have cooked the books so that even after you handled all the refunds, you still made more money than they originally paid. The audience has to pay for their tickets with their credit cards. We steal the credit card numbers and max them out to pay for the lavish party we throw after the show. Halliburton does the catering, so it costs about twice what it should. Now get this. We tape the whole show and broadcast it on Fox. Nobody watches it, but we paid Diebold to make the ratings counter so it will have the highest ratings in television history. The agent says, "Wow, that's a hell of an act. What do you call it?" And the guy says, "The Republicans."
Ashcroft looks for survive and has its own batteries. Lots of people out of work.
I feel no pain.
The Frenchies think that he's a jerk.
And so does Spain.
Or a flight suit on a boat.
They let me steer.
Just to get another boat.
I'll buy the beer.
Chug-a-luck, 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 chug-a-luck. Hush, my darling, the bread line's forming that we're gone. Hush now, Mama, forget Osama, Kabul and Kandahar.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
I'm so glad you got tickets to this concert.
Yeah, definitely. These guys put on a killer show.
Great, let's go.
Wait, it's just the opening band. Let's get a little stone first. It's crazy strong. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, The Anti-Drug.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Clarence Young, a scientist at GlaxoSmithKline, on how far he's willing to go.
Finding a new antibiotic is about as easy as catching one particular snowflake. It takes about 15 years to find one that works. Then, as soon as the bacteria develop resistance, we're right back where we started. But everyone benefits from antibiotics, so the war never stops. But GSK, quitting's just not an option.
GlaxoSmithKline. Today's medicines, tomorrow's miracles.
Thank you.
Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk,
he's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
About 7 and a half before the hour, a Raw story had a report yesterday, that suggests that Chris Matthews is another one of these paid media shills for the Bush crime family. Did you see this? It says Chris Matthews, the star of MSNBC's daily talk show Hardball, has been accepting hefty speaking fees from an array of conservative trade associations. Matthews has given speeches to at least 10 major conservative trade organizations since 2001. The report's author, Dave Johnson, who blogs at Seeing the Forest and is also a fellow at the Progressive Commonweal Institute, could find no records indicating that Matthews has spoken before any Democratic-leaning organizations. The question asks, Dave Johnson says, why is Matthews speaking at so many events with Republican-associated trade organizations? What is NBC policy on speaking engagements, and why does NBC keep it hidden? Are these trade associations paying Matthews to purchase influence? It says such fees typically run in the five-figure range and occasionally exceed $50,000 per engagement. Howard Kurtz reported in 2002 that NBC had banned the practice of journalists accepting speaking fees, but this report's author suggests otherwise. A call placed to Matthews' publicist was not immediately returned. An NBC spokesperson could not confirm to Raw Story whether the network had banned the acceptance of speaking fees. Yada, yada. Johnson says he made numerous calls to NBC inquiring about their speaking fee policy. He says his calls were not returned. So, Jesus, we have another one. Just doesn't stop. I guess I should confess, shouldn't I, Kathy? Huh? All right. Back to some phone calls here. Parviz is calling from Larchmont, New York. Parviz, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how
Thank
you doing?
Thank you very much. You know what I want to say? Condoleezza Rice gave a testimony in front of the Congress.
Yeah.
And she said, Iran is doing things that's 180 degrees in the opposite direction of what we want to do in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
I have some questions for Ms. Rice. I say, Ms. Rice, do you want to make Iran like Iraq with a pending civil war? Or do you want to put some white phosphorus on Iranians to burn them, you know, to the bone? Or do you want to put some depleted uranium on Iranians so for thousands of years they're going to get cancer? Or you want to capture them and torture them, or you want to send them to render them? You know, they have made a bad word out of democracy, because right now people all over the world don't like the word democracy the way Americans consider
mm-hmm.
it democracy.
Right.
Or Bush administration, not Americans. I mean, you're a beautiful American. I like your definition of democracy. But the way these guys, these new cons, you know, describe democracy, democracy has a bad taste. Look at them. Look what they're doing. And another thing, you know, they torture people and then don't allow them to collect compensation. For example, Maher Arar was tortured by these thugs here in New York,
mm-hmm.
where I live, was sent to, he arrested by them, was sent to Syria to be
right.
tortured, which is the same as if they had tortured him themselves. And then now he's suing American government.
And the courts have said he can't sue.
Yeah, and this judge, I hope this judge will be tortured a little bit like him, so he'll know if he needs compensation or not. These guys don't feel the pain of the people.
Amen.
And they have brought shame to America. People all over the world, Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, believe me, all of them, many, many, billions of people don't like America anymore.
Amen.
Because of Bush. These guys, you know, American people, my fellow citizens, let us get these guys out of office before they have brought more disgrace to our nation.
Well, Parviz, I hope that happens. I hope it happens. But, I hope it happens. Thanks for checking in. The attempts to intimidate Iran are just mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling. And there is only one reason. Iran is the fourth largest exporter of oil on Earth. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
You're already doing what's hard for your health. You diet.
That's hard.
You do regular exercise.
That's harder.
You even get a colonoscopy.
The hardest.
If your doctor says you're at risk for a heart attack, he could tell you that adding Bayer low dose is a simple way to help prevent 1 out of 3 heart attacks.
Now that's simple.
Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer low dose. A little does a lot.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
Well, Club, we read a real classic, The Mac and Cheese Box. Let's discuss.
Oh, I loved it. The boiling of the water, the adding of the salt.
What about the French directions?
Yeah, Bouillé de Eau de Tasses. So romantic.
Yeah.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What about next month? How about the French fried onion can? I've been dying to read it. Oh.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
I'm Jennifer Polsoni. The madness of terrorism is suddenly casting a shadow on March Madness in the U.S. The FBI issued a warning Friday of a possible security threat connected to the upcoming NCAA college basketball tournament. The possible threat was included in the agency's routine advisory sent out to law enforcement agencies around the country. An FBI spokesman says it was prompted by a posting on an extremist website. A Mars-bound space shuttle completed its 300 million-mile journey with a successful burn of its thrusters that eased it into its planned orbit around the planet Friday. NASA's project manager says despite the distance, the maneuver happened on schedule down to the second. The orbiter will slowly lower its orbit over the next 6 months as it moves in for close-up looks for signs of past life and future landing sites on Mars. Gail Norton resigned Friday as Interior Secretary, saying it was time to, quote, catch my breath and explore opportunities in the private sector. She led the Bush administration efforts to expand oil and gas exploration on federal lands during her 5-year term. She told reporters her decision to resign has nothing to do with accusations targeting her former assistant had provided help to convicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff in dealing with Indian casinos. The Interior Department oversees Indian affairs. Norton denied any ties to Abramoff. A second mistrial has been declared in the John Jr. Gotti case. As Jim Smith reports, both sides will have to start from scratch.
Exiting the courthouse after weeks on trial and minutes after learning another hung jury had been declared, Jr. Gotti said he was emotionally drained and was heading home to see his 5 kids, adding he shouldn't be confused with his late father.
Listen, you have to accept that I'm John A. Gotti, John J. Gotti's tomb 451.
A third round in court could come as early as next month. Gotti's lawyer Charles Carnesi says while they were shooting for acquittal in this case, they'll be ready again.
We're a little disappointed, but we'll do better next time.
Jurors said they could not come to an agreement on whether or not Gotti had left mob life and that continuing deliberations would be worthless. Jim Smith, New York.
A high school teacher in Colorado is going back to work. Jay Benish was suspended when students leaked a recording of a class discussion during which Benish challenged students to compare the tone of President Bush's State of the Union address to speeches by Adolf Hitler. You're listening to Air America Radio News.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This has got to be a Moody Blues weekend, Kathy. I think if I get the root canal done tomorrow, I think it's got to be a Moody Blues weekend. Oh Lord! All right, let's do some phone calls here. Do I have any? Wait a minute. This is from Trish in Sparks, Nevada. Trish writes in. Why? In the flower days, the answer was because. But really, why? Why are the Senate Democrats self-righteously harumphing about the NSA warrantless spying when almost all the Democrats in the Senate voted to renew the heinous Patriot Act? They can spy on us just as much with the Patriot Act as with the NSA FISA whatever, can't they? They can spy on us with or without a warrant from a secret court. What the hell's the difference? What are the Democrats doing? Your term, pink tutu Democrats, may say it all, but I still wonder why? You're right. We must abandon logic to stay sane. I try not to think about it, but logic, though it causes pain, isn't completely dead yet. Trish, the pink tutu thing is from Bart Kopp. I wish that were mine. I've stolen a lot of stuff from his website. And we'll probably continue to do so and get away with it. But every once in a while, somebody, you know, points it out. You know, I have to say, well, that came from Bart Kopp. If you haven't been to BartKopp.com, I have one question for you. Why the hell not? It just happens to be probably the premier political satire site on the Internet. All right, back to some phone calls here. Matt is calling from Boston. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike Malloy.
Hey, Matt W.
good to be on the air with you. This is the first time I've called in.
Well, welcome aboard.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm a small-time liberal blogger based here in Boston.
Yeah.
And
you want to say your site? You want to tell us your site?
Oh, hey, if you'll allow me to pimp
go,
it.
Of course. Go ahead.
DailySandwich.blogspot.com.
DailySandwich.blogspot.com?
That's it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
So I wanted to bring up kind of the issue of the fallout from the UAE port deal.
Yeah.
It's become pretty obvious at this point that the Republicans are going to be flogging this horse all the way through the elections and
to be able to listen and understand what you're talking about. On the Dubai ports deal, it was very simple. Our ports are going to be vulnerable. Oh, my God. You see? 7 words. That's all it takes. Now, this is the problem with Democrats. They can't frame issues in 7 or 8 words, one sentence. Karl Rove and the Republicans can. One other example, Terry Schiavo. You know, how many examples do we need here? So I agree with what you're saying. I really do, Matt. But the Democrats haven't figured out yet how necessary, crucial, and critical it is to use concise a totally perverted language. You invert meanings, you slam words together, you come up with a seven-word sentence, and you put it out there over and over and over again. So,
well, I couldn't agree with you more, and I just saw a news item today that I think should allow the Democrats to condense the issue into a two-word argument.
Say it.
Star Wars. Bush's new budget grants another $11 billion with a B dollars to the missile defense system.
No, Matt, that's something that a blogger might come up with, or something I might come up with.
Over the heads of.
It's Star Wars is the movie. That's all. No, I think it has to be something that hits right in the gut. Bush equals dead babies. You see, that's what they've done to Democrats. Democrats hate America. You see what I mean? So if you come up with Star Wars and people, oh yeah, man, I like that movie. You know, who in the hell knows that since 1982 we've spent about, I don't know, $100 billion on
more
nothing.
More than $100 billion at this point. It's
more than that.
I've written about it before, and I'm sorry I don't have the facts at my fingertips right now, but yes, that's how much we spent on folly, if you will.
All right, here's your assignment, if you wish to accept it. Remember, if you're found out...
You can disavow any knowledge.
That's right. If you're found out, the director will totally disavow any knowledge of who you are or what you're doing. But here's your assignment. You come up with a three or four sentence or phrasing, Matt, that will identify Republicans as the evil bastards they are. You come up with it and give it to Howard Dean, or give it to Democrats. Give it individually. Don't just give it to one, but give it individually, and you will become, I don't know, famous. All right?
Yeah, that doesn't sound bad.
Okay, but Star Wars ain't it, dude. All right?
I got you. Well, right, consider me on the job, Mike.
What's your blog site again?
DailySandwich.blogspot.com.
All right. I hope you got some good writing there, because thousands of people are heading there right now.
Yeah, I like to hear that. Thanks for your time, Mike.
All right, Matt.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks for checking in. Appreciate your call. That is the truth, and you know it is. The Republicans have destroyed language. Look at any of their bills. Look at Clean Sky, Clean Air Initiative, or what is it, Blue Sky Initiative? What is it, Kathy? Huh?
The Clean Skies Initiative.
Clean Air, Clean Sky.
Healthy Forest.
Healthy Forest Initiative. You first have to understand the importance, just like O'Brien understood, just like the people who wrote the dictionaries in 1984. You have to utterly deconstruct language, break it into a million pieces, get rid of 90% of it, and the 10% that remains has got to be clear, precise, and meaningless. And in that kind of a frame, then the meaningless precision can have what, or has whatever meaning Big Brother or George Bush or Condoleezza Rice wants it to mean. How many fingers am I holding up? So that's it's absolutely.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Email here from Garrick out in California. Garrick writes, why do Christian conservatives who proudly proclaim they hate liberals worship the most famous liberal ever, even bragging to have a personal relationship with his spirit? Why do they worship this liberal who was executed 2,000 years ago because of his liberal activism to help the poor? He said that heaven was not for the rich, so the conservatives then had him killed. I'm not confused about what Jesus stood for, Garrick writes, but I am very confused about conservatives. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. They don't worship Jesus. They make a mockery of Jesus. They crucify him over and over and over and over again. Every time one of these mega churches gets together, or one of these church these TV preachers, they show up with a sledgehammer and 10-penny nails and just butcher him all over again. They're not there to worship his life. They're there to celebrate and be thankful that he died. They're sick. They're disgusting. They're not followers of the message of Christ or Jesus, whatever you prefer there. All right, back to the phone calls. Ron is calling from Washington. Ron, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on.
Mike, my four words for Bush would be, the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah, okay.
But
see, there again. I mean, that's cool, and you understand it, and I understand it. People, this program understand it, but most folks would say, "Oh, yeah, that's a child's fairy tale, isn't it?" You got to have something that's real punchy, like Bush kills people and drinks their blood. No, but the real reason you called. Go ahead.
Hey, Mike, the question I have for you: do you think if the Democrats are able to take back the House this year, that impeachment hearings will go forward?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I'm making a hell of an assumption there that the Democrats who would take over the House with a majority would have the courage to do it. And here's why they would need courage. Because every pissant pundit in America, every right-wing thug would say they're doing it simply because the Republicans impeached Bill Clinton. So they would have to, the Democrats would have to be able to withstand that kind of nonsense. George Bush is destroying America. George Bush has committed treason against this country. He is already guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors. It's only up to the House to indict him and the Senate to convict him. But I'll tell you, if the Democrats do get control of one or both of them, well, they'd have to get control of the House. But if they get the control of the House and the Senate and introduce articles of a bill of impeachment, the screaming and caterwauling and fingernails down the chalkboard will start immediately. That all this is only about going after Bush because the Republicans went after Clinton.
Let me ask you this. So let's say they do impeach Bush. That would mean, you know, what would be the big game? Because if Bush is impeached, that would mean Cheney would be the president, correct?
No, they'd have to go after both of them for a vice president to be removed from office, too. I believe the Constitution says it can only happen through a death or impeachment. So they would have to impeach both. And if there is a Republican House, a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate, then and Nancy Pelosi was still the House leader, then she, as Speaker of the House, she would become the president. And then it would be up to the House to determine the two executive officers. And I'm tending to forget this because, if you'll remember, Nixon had Rockefeller, and Rockefeller died of a heart attack while he was boinking one of his secretaries, the Republican Family Values. So they put Ford in there, and then Ford, or have I got that backwards? No, I'm sorry. It was Spiro Agnew. He was convicted of all sorts of crime in Maryland, so he was forced out of office, and they put Gerald Ford in. And Gerald Ford then took over when Nixon was tossed out, and Ford appointed Nelson Rockefeller. And so for the first time in the country's history, we had an unelected president and an unelected vice president. And then, of course, Rockefeller dropped dead when he was having sex on his desk with his girlfriend or something like that. I don't even remember. That's, you know, I'm old, but it's hard to remember that stuff. I hope
so
that
for there be a true gain, so both Cheney and Bush would have to be
impeached. Yeah, they both have to go. They both have to be impeached by the House, but in order to be convicted in the Senate, it takes a Democratic majority in the Senate to convict him. You know, impeachment is squat. That's just an indictment. That just says this is a reason we, the House members, think this guy ought to be thrown out of office. It's up to the Senate then to make the final decision. They act as the jury.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
All right. Well, thanks for checking in, Ron. I wish I had good news. Yeah, indeed. All right. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, tonight's reading from George Orwell's 1984. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America.
Well, there's a mountain of bodies, there's a mountain of debt, there's a mountain of troubles, and it ain't over yet. Said, hey, yeah, the president has got to go. He's got to go. We want our country back. We're going to get it. Want to show him the door. Chemicals and nukes, you know, they never did appear. Yellow, orange, and red, just to keep us in fear. Said, hey, yeah, president has got to go.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K-9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the civil rights movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
Clarence Young, a scientist at GlaxoSmithKline, on how far he's willing to go.
Finding a new antibiotic is about as easy as catching one particular snowflake. It takes about 15 years to find one that works. Then, as soon as the bacteria develop resistance, we're right back where we started. But everyone benefits from antibiotics, so the war never stops. At GSK, quitting's just not an option.
GlaxoSmithKline. Today's medicines, tomorrow's miracles.
26 before the hour. If you've been following along with us here in 1984, Julia and Winston Smith have turned their one-night stand into what is becoming a relationship for both of them. And they have their motives, of course, both of them, for being in this highly charged sexual relationship. But what Winston has done now has he has rented a room in over Mr. Charrington's curio shop, and they have been hanging out there. When we left off the other night, Julia and Winston were meeting in the room, and when she showed up, she had all kinds of goodies in a sack that she brought along, real coffee, real tea, real jam. And then she asked Winston to turn away, and she said, "Don't turn around until I tell you."
"You can turn around now,"
said Julia. He turned around and for a second almost failed to recognize her. What he had actually expected was to see her naked, but she was not naked. The transformation that had happened was much more surprising than that. She had painted her face. She must have slipped into some shop in the proletarian quarters and bought herself a complete set of makeup materials. Her lips were deeply reddened, her cheeks rouged, her nose powdered. There was even a touch of something under the eyes to make them brighter. It was not very skillfully done, but Winston's standards in such matters were not high. He had never before seen or imagined a woman of the party with cosmetics on her face. The improvement in her appearance was startling. With just a few dabs of color in the right places, she had become not only very much prettier, but above all, far more feminine. Her short hair and boyish overalls merely added to the effect. As he took her in his arms, a wave of synthetic violets flooded his nostrils. He remembered the half-darkness of a basement kitchen and a woman's cavernous mouth. It was the very same scent that she had used, but at the moment it did not seem to matter. "Scent, too," he said.
"Yes, dear, scent, too. And do you know what I'm going to do next? I'm going to get a hold of a real woman's frock from somewhere and wear it instead of these bloody trousers. I'll wear silk stockings and high-heeled shoes. In this room, I'm going to be a woman, not a party comrade."
They flung their clothes off and climbed into the huge mahogany bed. It was the first time that he had stripped himself naked in her presence. Until now, he had been too much ashamed of his pale and meager body, with the varicose veins standing out in his calves and the discolored patch over his ankle. There were no sheets, but the blanket they lay on was threadbare and smooth, and the size and springiness of the bed astonished them both.
"It's sure to be full of bugs, but who cares?"
said Julia. One never saw a double bed nowadays, except in the homes of the proles. Winston had occasionally slept in one in his boyhood. Julia had never been in one before, so far as she could remember. Presently, they fell asleep for a little while. When Winston woke up, the hands of the clock had crept round to nearly 9. He did not stir, because Julia was sleeping with her head in the crook of his arm. Most of her makeup had transferred itself to his own face, or the bolster, but a light strain of rouge still brought out the beauty of her cheekbone. A yellow ray from the sinking sun fell across the foot of the bed and lighted up the fireplace where the water in the pan was boiling fast. Down in the yard, the woman had stopped singing, but the faint shouts of children floated in from the street. He wondered vaguely whether in the abolished past it had been a normal experience to lie in bed like this, in the cool of a summer evening, a man and a woman with no clothes on, making love when they chose, talking of what they chose, not feeling any compulsion to get up, simply lying there and listening to peaceful sounds outside. Surely there could never have been a time when that seemed ordinary. Julia woke up, rubbed her eyes, and raised herself on her elbow to look at the oil stove.
"Half that water's boiled away,"
she said.
"I'll get up and make some coffee in another moment. We've got an hour. What time did they cut the lights off at your flat?"
23:30.
"It's 23 at the hostel, but you have to get in earlier than that because
Hey, get out, you filthy brute.
She suddenly twisted herself over in the bed, seized a shoe from the floor, and sent it hurtling into the corner with a boyish jerk of her arm, exactly as he had seen her fling the dictionary at Goldstein that morning during the 2 minutes hate. What was it? He said in surprise.
A rat. I saw him stick his beastly nose out of the wainscoting. There's a hole down there. I gave him a good fright anyway.
Rats. In this room?
They're all over the place,
said Julia indifferently as she lay down again.
We've even got them in the kitchen at the hostel. Some parts of London are swarming with them. Did you know they attack children? Yes, they do. In some of these streets, a woman daren't leave a baby alone for 2 minutes. It's that great, huge, brown one that do it. And them nasty things that the brutes all wear.
Don't go on, said Winston with his eyes tightly shut.
Dearest, you've gone quite pale. What's the matter? Do they make you feel sick?
Of all the horrors in the world, a rat. She pressed herself against him and wound her limbs around him as though to reassure him with the warmth of her body. He did not reopen his eyes immediately. For several moments, he had had the feeling of being back in a nightmare, which had recurred from time to time throughout his life. It was always very much the same. He was standing in front of a wall of darkness, and on the other side of it, there was something unendurable, something too dreadful to be faced. In the dream, his deepest feeling was always one of self-deception, because he did in fact know what was behind the wall of darkness. With a deadly effort, like wrenching a piece out of his own brain, he could even have dragged the thing into the open. He always woke up without discovering what it was, but somehow it was connected with what Julia had been saying when he cut her short. I'm sorry, he said. It's nothing. I don't like rats, that's all.
Don't worry, dear. We're not going to have the filthy brutes in here. I'll stuff the hole with a bit of sacking before we go. And next time we come here, I'll bring some plaster and bung it up proper.
Already the black instant of panic was half forgotten. Feeling slightly ashamed of himself, he sat up against the bedhead. Julia got out of bed, pulled on her overalls, and made the coffee. The smell that rose from the saucepan was so powerful and exciting that they shut the window lest anybody outside should notice it and become inquisitive. What was even better than the taste of the coffee was the silky texture given to it by the sugar, a thing Winston had almost forgotten after years of saccharin. With one hand in her pocket and a piece of bread and jam in the other, Julia wandered about the room, glancing indifferently at the bookcase, pointing out the best ways of repairing the gate-leg table, plumping herself down in the ragged armchair to see if it was comfortable, and examining the absurd 12-hour clock with a sort of tolerant amusement. She brought the glass paperweight over to the bed to have a look at it in a better light. He took it out of her hand, fascinated, as always, by the soft, rainwatery appearance of the glass.
What is it, do you think?
Said Julia. I don't think it's anything. I mean, I don't think it was ever put to any use. That's what I like about it. It's a little chunk of history that they've forgotten to alter. It's a message from 100 years ago, if one knew how to read it.
And that picture over there?
She nodded at the engraving on the opposite wall.
Would that be 100 years old?
More. 200, I dare say. One can't tell, though. It's impossible to discover the age of anything nowadays. She went over to look at it.
Here's where that brute stuck his nose out,
she said, kicking the wainscoting immediately below the picture.
What is this place? I've seen it before somewhere.
It's a church, or at least it used to be. St. Clement's Danes, its name was. The fragment of rhyme that Mr. Charrington had taught him came back into his head, and he added, half nostalgically, "Oranges and lemons, say the bells of St. Clement's." To his astonishment, she capped the line.
"You owe me 3 farthings, say the bells of St. Martin's. When will you pay me, say the bells of Old Bailey." I can't remember how it goes after that, but anyway, I remember it ends up, "Here comes a candle to light you to bed. Here comes a chopper to chop off your head."
It was like the two halves of a countersign, but there must be another line after the bells of Old Bailey. Perhaps it could be dug out of Mr. Charrington's memory if he were suitably prompted. "Who taught you that?" he said.
"My grandfather. He used to say it to me when I was a little girl. He was vaporized when I was 8. At any rate, he disappeared. I wonder what a lemon was,"
she added inconsequently.
"I've seen oranges. They're kind of round yellow fruit with thick skin."
"I can remember lemons," said Winston. "They were quite common in the 50s. They were so sour that it set your teeth on edge even to smell them."
"I bet that picture's got bugs behind it,"
said Julia.
"I'll take it down and give it a good clean someday. I suppose it's almost time you were leaving. I must start washing this paint off. Oh, what a bore. I'll get the lipstick off your face afterward."
Winston did not get up for a few minutes more. The room was darkening. He turned over toward the light and lay gazing into the glass paperweight. The inexhaustibly interesting thing was not the fragment of coral, but the interior of the glass itself. There was such a depth of it, and yet it was almost as transparent as air. It was as though the surface of the glass had been the arch of the sky, enclosing a tiny world with its atmosphere complete. He had the feeling that he could get inside it, and that in fact he was inside it, along with the mahogany bed, and the gate leg table, and the clock, and the steel engraving, and the paperweight itself. The paperweight was the room he was in, and the coral was Julia's life and his own, fixed in a sort of eternity at the heart of the crystal.
Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Jen, what's up?
Hey, how'd you know I was having a party?
Everyone knows you're having a party.
Yeah, pretty crazy, isn't it?
Totally.
Hey, I'm gonna smoke up. Wanna get high? Here, you'll like this.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, the anti-drug.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
You're already doing what's hard for your health. You diet. That's hard. You do regular exercise. That's harder. You even get a colonoscopy. The hardest. If your doctor says you're at risk for a heart attack, he could tell you that adding Bayer low dose is a simple way to help prevent one out of three heart attacks. Now that's simple. Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer low dose. A little does a lot.
Your host for a Peance Friance future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew in New York, Justin Yuen and Jason Isaac for engineering the program tonight. D. Neal, our associate producer, answered your calls tonight. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, webmaster, Ben Birch, White Rose Society, and Jim in Arkansas, our music bureau chief. If you live in or around Madison, Wisconsin, check out MikeMalloy.com for some information on my speaking there next Tuesday, the 14th. What's happening Monday night is I'll be on the air Monday night, but from 94.1 the mic in Madison. 92.1. We have 94.1 here. 92.1 the mic. I'm probably going to catch hell when I get up there from the management. It says, can't you get our station straight? Good God. Anyway, we'll be there Monday night, broadcasting from the studios in Madison. Tuesday night, we'll be off. Laura Flanders will be filling in for me on Tuesday night. We'll be back here in Atlanta on Wednesday. Just so you know. Christy is calling from Indianapolis. Christy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Great to talk to you.
My pleasure.
I have been listening to you for the last couple of days. I caught you on Randy's show the other day. I don't have a phrase, but I have a framework, and I'm a PhD student, so I think in these meta sort of things. And I've read Fortunate Son, and I've read George Lakoff's work, and my sense is that we just need to come up with something that brings progressives together. You know, we've got the, you know, I'm a lesbian, we have gay lesbian, we have, you know, pro-choice, we have everything like that. Humanism. And, you know, I heard your conversation the other day about, you know, humanistic beliefs, or your humanistic beliefs, and the complete ability of, I mean, I was raised Catholic, so, and right now I consider myself a Christian, Buddhist, humanist, you know, a little bit of everything.
Well, that's, and, I guess that's good.
Yeah, but the complete ability to, well, number one, secular humanism is always a nice idea when you have the separation of church and state.
Sure.
But the whole idea of finding a way to unify progressives and around a common belief, at least. And then, but I don't have a tagline. So, you know, well, I was thinking, as I'm waiting, you know, birth to death, Democrats, you know, before birth and after death, Republicans. You know, it's like, they believe in the afterlife, and they believe in, you know, life before birth. And so it's like, but that's a little bit too, I just remember, I don't know how many years ago it was, somebody on the, you know, one of the pundits saying, you know, if these radical Republicans, you know, these right-wing radicals ever have control of the party, that, you know, the, then you lose, you know, you lose the party. But it happened, so.
Well, I think the Republican Party is dead. What has taken its place is this undead apparition known as neoconservatism, or neofascism is, I think, more correct. But the Republican Party is actually, factually, clearly, and completely dead. What has replaced it is something that is going to be very difficult to stick a stake through. And that's what it's going to take. The only way you can kill a vampire, you know, is with a stake through the heart. And somebody is going to have to do that. You know, I watched enough Buffy the Vampire Slayer to understand exactly what has to be done. Either literally or figuratively, the only way you can kill a vampire is a stake in the heart. So, but what we're looking for here for political death is something that can frame in a very simple sentence that people can understand, because we are very illiterate, uneducated people. We are. We may, certainly where it concerns politics. So right. It has to be something that we can get our little minds around very quickly and easily that points out to us that the Republicans are destroying our country, our lives, our futures, destroying the world, that they are vicious, greedy sons of bitches. Now, you see, I just used about 14 words there, and that's not going to work. So,
right.
And plus, it can't have any profanity.
Hey, I've got a question.
If you can do it in about 20 seconds, go ahead.
You read Fortunate Son?
Have I read that? Yeah, yes, I did. As a matter of fact, did we have the author on? Yes, we did have the author on.
The funny thing is, I read it, and it should be a novel. It's so funny because all the names, Harriet Myers, Al Gonzalez, all the names in that book are, which was written before 2001, are the ones that are out now. It's just so funny to read
it. It is. It is.
Turn the pages and say, there's another one. There's another one.
Right.
Good to talk to you.
All right. Thanks, Christy. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Oh. We're about out of time, aren't we? No point in taking another caller. You know, I'm saying that we will broadcast from Wisconsin on Monday night. That is if two things. If the plane I'm on doesn't crash, A, B, that I can still get on a plane. You know, I hope I'm not on anybody's no-fly list. But if I am...
Stop giving them ideas.
If I am on that no-fly list, you'll know about it, True Seeker, because there will be just... real hardcore attitude at the airport that will probably get me arrested. Hey, thanks for participating tonight. I appreciate it, however you did that. I'll see you Monday night in Madison, Wisconsin. Have a nice weekend, okay? Take care. Watch your back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
What are you reading?
Soda Can.
Like it?
I've read it before.
Yeah, me too. I found it rather predictable. Carbonated water, aspartame.
I like the part about the final ketonuric, though. Mm. Sounds so ominous.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What do you think the author meant by canned under the authority of?
Oh, that part did seem to come out of nowhere.
That's what I thought.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
He lied about Iraq, ignores Katrina victims, favors special interests, does nothing about rising health care and oil prices, and now he wants to give our ports away. I'm Mike Malloy, and you can find all these Bush crimes and more in the game of Impeached. Just go to ImpeachBushGame.com, where you'll find the board game that's taking America by storm, Impeached. If you're as sick as I am with the Bush crime family's incompetence, greed, and stupidity, you need to visit ImpeachBushGame.com and buy your game today. Okay.